Thank you, Allison, very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and good evening to everybody. In order to understand the what we call SAFER, by the way, that's the Simplified Aid for EVA Rescue. Whenever I use the word EVA, and I'll try not to use it, but it's a habit, that means a spacewalk, extravehicular activity, EVA. So whenever, in order to understand this case study, we're going to have to understand a few of the basics of the space shuttle to see how it integrates in. So let's go over the space shuttle first, and then we'll take a look at the SAFER as a case study. The space shuttle is a very large vehicle, and what we'll take a look at is a few of the components of the space shuttle, the bigger ones, the ones that tend to fall off. And once we look at that, we'll look at a typical launch and then some orbit operations, a typical jobs in orbit, and then the landing. And then you'll all be ready to ride. And this is the big part, and a typical launch, and you can see it consists of three very large objects. The solid rocket boosters right here and right here burn for 2 minutes, and as the name implies, they have solid fuel in them. Now, the external tank is right here. It's the orange part, and it has liquid fuel in it. The liquid fuel is pumped into the orbiter and then is burned out of the engines here. The whole idea is to make this thing reusable. That was the whole fundamental concept of the space shuttle, was to make it reusable. So the only thing that is not reused is the external tank. Notice the engines are located on the shuttle so they get to be returned. Well, a typical mission starts with the previous mission. It lands, when the shuttle lands, usually in California, it will be transported to Florida on 747, as you see here. Notice the space shuttle is kind of looks a little bit weather-torn there, and that's because it's just traveled several million miles in space. That's a specially modified 747 we use to transport it around the country. Once we get it to Florida, this is a shot of the Launch Processing Center in Florida, and you can see that there are two smaller buildings right here. These are actually hangars, and the orbiter is rolled up this causeway into one of those hangars, and there it is processed for about 70 days. It's a lot of work to take the processing and into its completed form. In that time, all of the systems are rechecked and revamped, and the fueling takes place on the RCS jet, the reaction control jets, and the payloads are put in, etc. It takes about 70 days. Once that is completed, then the orbiter is rolled over into this very large building. And while the orbiter was being processed, and by orbiter I mean the small thing with the wings on it, while that was being processed, the rockets, the solid rockets, were being built up in this very large building. I'm told it's the second largest building by volume in the world. And it's actually so large it rains in the top of it sometimes when the weather conditions are correct. Now, inside that very large building called the Vertical Assembly Building is where the solid rocket boosters are built up. And you can see the technicians here are building the solid rocket boosters. And they're made in Utah and shipped on a train to Florida where they are assembled. This is a very, very delicate operation. There's a fuel right there, and there's sealant that goes upon the tops of the fuel to inhibit the flame from exiting the where the joint occurs. And so they very, very carefully lower that those two pieces together. And it's a delicate operation. You wouldn't want to drop one of these things. This is the external tank, and it's empty, by the way, when it's assembled, and it's being hoisted up into position inside the Vertical Assembly Building. The orange color is the thermal protection, which is sprayed on. It's a foam type of material, and it's just sprayed on the outside aluminum skin. And here you can see the two solid rocket boosters and the external tank, and they're set on a mobile platform inside the building. And then the orbiter is lowered down into position. And this is the mobile platform that I was talking about. It was inside the building, and it's rolled out on these tracks right here. You can see four treads, and this thing doesn't go very fast, about 1 mile an hour, and you can kind of walk along, and it's a very impressive sight to see this crawling out to the launch pad. And this thing is in transit right now, and it's going up this ramp. The actual mobile launch platform tilts to the correct compensation for this ramp, and fairly soon it will position itself over this flame trench right here alongside the gantry. And here it sits out on the gantry for about 3 weeks while the technicians are preparing it for flight. And you can see it sitting there day and night, 24 hours a day. The technicians are working on it. As a matter of fact, during this time, the crew usually goes out about 3 weeks before the flight and strolls around the pad to talk to the technicians and see what they're doing, as if we know what they're doing. We don't, but we actually like to go out there and talk to them anyway. And when I go out there, it always strikes me that there are a tremendous number of people who are crawling all over this machine, and they're pulling panels off and dragging hoses around and extension cords with screwdrivers and doing all sorts of work on it. And it amazes me. I just kind of sit back and think, I sure hope they know what they're doing. And it turns out they do. They've done a pretty good job. And they, as time goes on, this three-week period, as it gets closer and closer to the launch, more and more panels are actually buttoned up on the vehicle, and it becomes a little more tidy, and things go along, and pretty soon on the launch day, it looks pretty good. Now, notice, by the way, that this tank is white, and the other ones were orange. Those were white tanks because we used to paint them white, and this is kind of an old picture. Then one day, somebody discovered that the paint weighed about 120 kilos and cost a lot of money, and the tank ends up in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And so we don't paint them anymore. But this is where the action is. Once you get to the pad, you strap in the vehicle. It takes about 4 hours to strap in and switch, make all the switches work in the right spot. And eventually the launch occurs and everybody's off. This is my first launch. It was a night launch. It was a classified Defense Department mission, so we figured we'd sneak up on them at night and not announce it. But we lit up half the Western Hemisphere. And this is a picture. Look, is that out of focus? Maybe I'll focus that a little bit. Yeah, there we go. And this is a picture, once again, of the launch pad taken by some intrepid photographer, I'm sure. And notice that the solid rocket boosters are burning, and once they are lit, you're along for the ride. The main engines, however, are lit 6 seconds before the solid rocket boosters, and during that 6 seconds, the computers look at them and judge them as healthy or not. If they're not healthy, they'll shut down, and the solid rocket boosters will not light. The flight controls surfaces are along here, ailerons and flaperons and body flaps, a tail right there. They don't do anything during launch except just try to hang on. And they are moved so that the shock waves come over the surfaces and don't exceed their hinge moments. So there is a program to move them, but that's simply to keep them from falling off. And all of the control is done by the thrust vectoring of the main engines, the main engines and the solid rocket boosters. Well, this is, there you go, a little bit of a slant. You can see that we've just passed through this cloud deck here, and there's some high cirrus up there, so I figure we're about probably 12,000, maybe 15,000 feet, and by that time you're going Mach 2 and at an angle of about 30 degrees from the vertical. So we're already trying to get into space. Eventually, and this is taken from the ground, the solid rocket boosters do fall off. They're trying to burn out. That's almost off the top of the screen. Just shows the goya how high the shuttle can get. And it's taken from the ground, a little bit blurry. But the external tank and the shuttle are still proceeding up to space. Solid rocket boosters last for 2 minutes, fall into the ocean outside of Florida. There are two boats out there, pick them up, drag them back, and they refurbish them and reuse them. And there, sure enough, they parachute down. If everything happens right, this is where you finally end up. And that is a picture of the orbiter in space. And let me just go over a couple of things because I'll show you some photos here that might be a little bit confusing. The cockpit is right there. That's where all of the people stay 90% of the time. These are two sun shields for satellites, which will eventually be deployed. These silver parts are radiators. Those are doors that have radiators on them, and then the heat of the orbiter is rejected through those radiators. Once you're on orbit, you have about 2 hours to open those doors. If you can't get the doors open, you can't stay on orbit because the heat will build up so much that we'll have to come back. So it's critical we get the doors open. And to get back, it's critical you get the doors closed. I'm going to be showing you some pictures here in a little bit. By the way, there are two overhead windows right there, and there are two windows on the back bulkhead right here, which we take a lot of pictures from. And when you see pictures of the tail sticking up, that's because somebody's looking backwards, taking a picture into the payload bay. And this is a picture of the external tank. As I said, it ended up in the Indian Ocean right after after the engines shut off after 8 minutes. All the fuel is gone in the tank. The tank is jettisoned. We turn around and take a picture of it just in case something went wrong. You can see how charred it is on the bottom. That's the radiant heat from the engines. This is a foamy type of material for the thermal protection system, and we've calculated that we can withstand about 4 square inches, which would be about 20 square centimeters, I suppose, of a missing thermal protection before the tank thermal limits are exceeded. Typical jobs, this is a satellite that has been launched, or is in the process of being launched, I should say. It's erected up into space and then is ejected out of the payload bay. You can see it. It's a very large satellite. That's, by the way, the Ohms pods for the shuttle. And this is, again, one of those pictures out the back right before the satellite was launched. And picture of my last mission. This is a laser system right here that shoots into the atmosphere and measures the atmospheric pollution. So we took a global study of the atmosphere. This is the mechanical arm, the robot arm that we use to deploy satellites and do other robotics in space. And another experiment over here, which is picked up by the arm. I've turned all the pictures upside down for you. This is the way we usually fly, upside down with the tail pointing towards the Earth, and the Earth on the bottom and the sky on the top. But most people find this a little disoriented, so I've turned them upside down. And that laser was used for such studies as this thunderstorm here. This is the top looking down on a thunderstorm. This is probably about 25,000 meters high, a thunderstorm in the South Pacific. The Aurora Borealis is a very interesting sight, and it's hard to photograph. That's why this photograph looks a little bit fuzzy, because they move around so much and they're very faint. But these are the northern lights or the southern lights. These happen to be in the South Pole, and those are caused by the solar wind sending out particles, let's say an electron or a proton, intersecting with the magnetic field lines of the Earth, and where the magnetic field lines intersect perpendicularly with the atmosphere, the protons are captured, spiral down the field lines, intersect the atmosphere, knocks an electron off an atmospheric molecule. When the electron falls back into its orbit, it emits a photon and we see it. And please, for all the physicists in the group, I've just 20 years of physics lessons in about 20 seconds there, so hope you can put up with that. We do a lot of Earth observations. This is a volcano that went off in the South Pacific while we are airborne. And notice it's an interesting look here at the lower atmosphere where the heavy particles are. They don't go up so high, and so the wind blows them in one direction. All this other stuff, which is steam and sulfur, goes up into the upper atmosphere, and the wind's blowing 180 degrees out. And you can see how extensive this thing is. This is probably 500 kilometers across here, a very extensive volcanic eruption. Sometimes we don't have enough room in that habitable area to do all the experiments we need to do, so we put an entire laboratory in the payload bay and spend all of the time doing scientific experiments, as opposed to deploying satellites or doing other research like that. So this is a picture out the back window of the habitable area, which is called a space lab. Right there is a tunnel where we use to get from the mid-deck all the way back into the laboratory. And here is a picture of the laboratory on my second mission. That's Professor Jean Trin from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory doing a fluids experiment. And I happen to be working in a glove box back there, which is a way that we can handle hazardous materials in orbit without extensive safety precautions. once our job on orbit is done, it's time to get back. And you'll notice this is an interesting picture of the cockpit. There's the commander, Dick Richards, and he's already suited up in his launch and entry suit. And we're trying to come home. So we've gotten up that morning, made the ship ready, or in the process of making the ship ready to re-enter. And so we've dressed Dick in his launch and entry suit first. This is Susan Helm. She's what we call MS2, which you would know as a flight engineer. Sits in the middle back here, and she'll be dressed third. This is the pilot, Blaine Hammond. He'll be dressed second. I think that's me in the mid-deck access area, not dressed at all, because I was on the mid-deck anyway, and nobody saw whether I got in that suit or not, so it didn't bother me much. Actually, I did get dressed, just in case somebody's recording this and my boss is listening. To get back now, to go into space, all you got to do is kind of get above the atmosphere, turn horizontal, and go real fast, 17,000 miles an hour. And once you do that, you're in orbit. And then to get back, all you got to do is slow down just a little bit. So we use the two engines right there, that one and that one. Now, these are not those three great big main engines that you saw on the launch. Those are not used once the launch is over. So we use those two little engines. They're called orbiter maneuvering engines. And we turn backwards, fire those into the velocity vector to slow down about 1% of our velocity, or our kinetic energy, I should say. And then that's enough to let us drop into the atmosphere, where 98% of the energy is consumed by heating up the air. And if that all works, great. We just come in and glide for a landing. And this happens to be Edwards Air Force Base, where we landed on my second and third mission, I believe it was. And we also have a drag chute out the back there. You can see the drag chute. But that was one of the additions that we put on the orbiter after the Challenger accident. Okay, well, those are the basics of the space shuttle. Okay.